This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
A lot of football, a lot of basketball, some attendance news, and some other offbeat things. But now we bring on the one and only Seth Greenberg, who knows all when we start breaking down ACC hoops and other stuff. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you guys doing? You look all chipper.
Well, we are today. Now, if you had joined us yesterday after a 1-6 Big Ten thumping, we might have had a little bit different disposition. But after the sweep last night, things are a little rosier around the ACC land today. The ACC really kind of needed a little 4-0 kick last night.
Yeah, they did. And, all the games were good. And the ACC Big Ten Challenge, and obviously I played in it for a number of years, it's interesting because, you know, all season long you fight your in-league opponents. But during the ACC Big Ten Challenge, you're all one. And you're all pulling for each other. And you're all making sure, as a head coach, you're saying, we've got to win our game. We've got to represent the league. And I thought that's what happened last night. I think those teams played with incredible, incredible pride to say, you know what? We're down 6-1. We've got to do something to basically change the impression and how this thing looks. Because, and that's what those teams did. The Pitt win was incredible. I think the only time they led in the game was, the last minute or so. So it was huge for the league. It was huge for the perception of the league. And I think those teams were real prideful in terms of holding up the honor of the league.
Hey, Seth, side note, Packer turned the Pitt game off in the first half. He just couldn't take it anymore. He canceled off in the first half.
Get specific. I pulled a Spurrier. I went about 10 minutes and said, Seth, you know what? I'm committed to hoops. I like it. But I'm having a hard time with this. It was, 17-6, and I tapped out. I just tapped out. I couldn't do it.
I'll tell you what, Champagne, whatever, he can make some buckets now. Ooh. That guy can get in and make play. And they start to share the ball. Pitt's interesting because I watched a lot of Pitt yesterday morning before I went to the studio because we knew they were moving the game to ESPN. And they've got pieces. At times, they don't move the ball or their shot selection isn't good, but they always play hard defensively. And they just continue to grind away. It was kind of hard because I really like Chris Collins. That's a hard loss for a Northwestern team that's going to be good. Last year he played all those young guys. They're a year older. He adds the William & Mary transfer, and they're better. But that was a big win for Pitt, especially – they needed something, and they've done it. After opening up the season losing to St. Francis, he got their attention. People started saying, Pitt's back, and then they lose to St. Francis. Preseason magazines and speculation doesn't win you games. What wins you games is playing hard, defending, and sharing the basketball, taking good shots. And as the game wore on, I thought they were better at that.
Seth, you of all the games you coached, when you are a head coach and it's early in the season, as you pointed out, and Pitt's down 7 with inside 4 to go and really never had the lead. You mentioned in the last minute. Pitt only led for the last 5 seconds of the game, but it was the most important 5 seconds. How does a game like that, especially during this crazy pandemic when you just don't know if you're coming or going anymore, can that be a catalyst for a team like Pitt? Where you sit there and you say, really, quite frankly, you got on the plane last night to get home. Hey, we kind of stole that one. But you know what? We just hung in there because it never looked good. You're down 17-6. You played 10, 11 minutes. You can't throw it in the ocean. And all of a sudden, you're down 7 with inside 4. It looks like this thing's going to get away from you. And you find a way to win, right? Those are the kind of games sometimes that can jumpstart a program where all of a sudden guys start to believe, hey, we're never out of a game.
Well, that's the whole key, Pack, is that you need – all preseason, you get in great shape. You do your defensive drills. You kind of try to develop your identity. You try to talk to the guys about competing. It's a 40-minute game. Get to the next play. All the things you talk to your team all season long about. You get in those timeouts with down 4, and you say, this is why we condition. This is why we lift. This is why we do our shell stuff. This is why we get in stance. And then all of a sudden, you win the game. You get the stops you need to get. You make the shots you need to make. So now when the next time you're in that situation, you can go back to your team and say, hey, this is no different than the Pitt game, all right? We got 4 minutes left. We got to get 3 stops. We got to get three stops, and we got to execute offensively. We do those two things, all right, we're going to win this game. All right, we've done it before. We can do it right now. Let's get to the next stop right now. Most important thing, let's get the next stop. Let's have a good offensive possession. Well, they have something to go back to now. You know, if you're a team like my last year at Tech, we lost so many close games. We played four freshmen. We had, you know, one sophomore that played a lot of minutes. The Clemson game in the ACC tournament, we fought and we stayed together and we found a way to win. And, you know, it's funny, when walking off the court that day, and in fact, someone posted the post-game press conference from the ACC tournament just yesterday. And in my mind, I'm saying, now these young kids know how to grind out, find a way to win a close game. In my mind, I was saying that game was going to pay huge dividends next season, because all the things we invested in, all right, I could hear them in our timeouts. I could hear them talking to each other about all the things we kind of instilled in them all season long, and it paid off. There's a payoff at the end. And when there's a payoff at the end, guys get that much more committed to the process. So I think that this could be a huge win for Pitt.
All right, how big then? I want to pivot to Tallahassee. How big's a win for Florida State last night? Don't shoot it worth a flip at the free throw line. MJ Walker's really good. Scotty Barnes, who the expectations are really high, makes unbelievable plays. And they kind of survived last night in some respect with their just by staying together, it seems like.
Yeah, staying together. When you say Florida State stays together, it's not five guys staying together. It's like 13 guys staying together. I mean, like, the amazing thing is that he can get all those guys to buy in to their roles, to playing their 20-something minutes, to playing hard, to enjoying someone else's success. Look, that was a hard-fought game. I thought Indiana really competed. They played hard. Trace Jackson Davis is very good. I thought Durham was good. I thought that it was hard to get an easy shot. That was Florida State basketball. That was just, you know, the uglier they got, the game got, that better it was in a lot of ways for them. The emergence of Scotty Barnes to me was huge. Like, you know, Raekwon Gray, you kind of know who he's going to be, and I just think he's kind of an interesting piece. You know, MJ Walker, that big three he knocked down on the roll replace that they ran out of the timeout, he was so shot ready. I mean, it was almost like it was his turn. It was his turn. You know, he'd see Devin Vassell probably make that shot. And, you know, last year it was run for Devin Vassell. And boom, MJ Walker knocked down that jumper. For this team to really take the next step, you know they're going to defend. You know they're going to rebound. You know they're going to wear you out. You know, all those things. But Scotty Barnes had to kind of put his arms around who he was. And he made some plays in that game, man. You know, that ball fake where he made the left-hand layup early in the game. But this thing here, I mean, like, just so soft Euro step. Like, and that's a big-time play to put it in a freshman's hands, a 6'9 point guard. And, you know, that's why I think Leonard said, you know, part Magic Johnson, part Scottie Pippen, the guy defends. He's got a great spirit about him. This was a Florida State win, and this is a huge win because this is a win that you can build on. And I had a conversation yesterday with Charlton Young, one of Leonard's assistant coaches. In the conversation, he said something to me that I thought was really good. He said, culture doesn't graduate. Mm. They've got an incredible culture. They've got an incredible respect for each other as a team. And we said it before the season, guys. You know, we can talk about Carolina. We can talk about Duke. We can talk about Virginia. But if you look over the last 4 years and one constant, Florida State's got to be in that conversation.
Yep, no doubt about that. That's a great line, by the way. Culture doesn't graduate. People be stealing that line, I guarantee you. That's a good one. But, you know, it's interesting that, again, it's an early snapshot. We're 2 weeks into a season, so you can't go too overboard. But there's more, for me at least, I'll only speak for me on this one. Wes may agree, I don't know. There seems to be more unknown at the top than what I thought 3 weeks ago. I mean, you just mentioned the Blue Bloods. You can throw Louisville in there too. And we really didn't see them in the Big Ten Challenge, so it's still kind of hard to put those guys in the conversation, but you know they're going to be good. But the middle and the bottom, what the perceived middle and the bottom of the league might be a lot better than I thought. And the top, I'm not sure about yet. And I don't mean to be disrespectful to anybody in that statement. But again, we're 2 weeks in. You can't go too overboard. But I'm curious, Seth, do you feel the same way? That, hey, you know, Virginia's got work to do. Duke has a lot of work to do. North Carolina, you know, there's pieces okay. You know, you mentioned Florida State with the culture. But, you know, a team like Clemson, you know, they kind of gave you a little Leonard last night, right? 12 guys playing, 25 points off the bench, got experience, might be a lot better than advertised. You loved NC State. That was the team you said keep an eye on. Unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to see them against Michigan, but they've obliterated everybody that they've played so far and could be one of those teams. Georgia Tech's had good wins. So the league is really kind of an enigma, isn't it? It's like the middle and the bottom could be better than advertised, and the top is to be determined.
I think you hit it right on the money, Pack. I think look at the top. I mean, or you got North Carolina, who I like, and they're going to get better. But they're playing two freshman guards. It's hard to play one freshman guard. I mean, Roy the last 2 years had to play a freshman guard. He's playing two. They're turning it over 20% of their possessions. They're shooting like 28 or 29% from the 3-point line. Look, the big guys are really good. They're going to get better. I did like North Carolina. They finally got out in transition. They scored 24 points in transition in that game. I thought that was really, really huge that, you know, they played ahead of the defense. They went to the scramble finally, which was good. So they created some easy buckets off their defense. I thought that was good. But they're not there yet. And when you're playing young guards, you really don't know what you're going to get out of them. I like that Leaky Black was more aggressive, especially at the end of the game. So Carolina's interesting, but they're a work in progress because two freshman guards, they're going to be nights that they're just not going to be very good. That's just the way it is. Duke, to me. They
go ahead with Duke, yes.
I got to be honest with you guys, just, you know, real quickly, is that they don't have an identity offensively. They can't maintain an intensity. They don't have that one guy. Like, when I think of Duke, let's face it, you know, you think of Tatum, you think of Ingram, you think of Zion, you think of Barrett, you think of one guy. When things go south, they always have that one dude that they can play through. They don't have that one dude that they can play through. They miss the leadership, obviously, of Trey Jones. They can defend at times, but they're not mature enough, tough enough, physical enough to defend at long periods of time. So, you know, we watched Kentucky the other day, and we watched Duke, and they look like the same team.
Mm-hmm.
They're not strong enough, tough enough, mature enough to maintain an intensity that you need to beat good teams over 40 minutes.
All right, real quick, after a bad two games to start the season, 4 overtime loss to Georgia State and the loss to Mercer, has Pastor found a way wearing the welder's mask to get the Jackets back on even par here?
You know, I was impressed. Like last night, they took better care of the basketball. They only committed 9 turnovers. That's huge,
right?
I mean, they were turning over at a high clip last year, and that's why they struggled at times. Jose Alvarado played well, made shots, made good decisions. DeVoe was good. They got a big three, obviously, Moses Wright. I thought they're defending. And, you know, right now their ability and against non-conference teams, when they go that 1-3-1 to the 2-3 on makes and go man-to-man on misses, that disrupts people. It disrupts people. Yeah. And then offensively, when they take care of the basketball. So, I do think they took a huge step forward. And talking to Josh, you know, he says that they didn't have any contact practice until about a week ago, that he kept them separated because he was concerned about the virus. But they smashed the virus yesterday because after the game, they had a coronavirus basketball filled with candy. I guess they go to, like, gas stations after games on the way home and get candy for the guys.
Yeah.
Obviously not a big health food kit, but – right here. This is hilarious. Wearing the shield, holding the virus, and smashing the virus. And I hope we are smashing the virus, and I hope the vaccine does smash the virus. But it's a fun thing. I mean, he doesn't have a turnover chain, or he's got the coronavirus, and he's just, you know, smashing the hell out of it.
I love it. By the way, real quick, Brad Brunell's guys, I just want to go to it. Hey, again, I was busy with radio yesterday, but I saw the score was 40-15, and I thought Dabo was playing. You don't normally see Mark Turgeon teams get smoked. That was a pretty impressive win by Clemson.
Really, and they're good. You know, they got a little bit of Leonard in you, like you guys were saying. He's playing 11 guys. Their guards put a lot of pressure on him, offensively and defensively. They get up underneath your defense, but they take you out. They have versatility. Obviously, Amir Sims, just having him on the floor, it gives you so much versatility on both sides of the ball. But like Newman and Dawes and Honor, I mean, those three guys are like bulldogs. They're like pit bulls. They come at you. They come at you. They come at you. They're pressuring the ball defensively. Offensively, they're not afraid. They're averaging four more possessions a game. That doesn't sound a lot, but it is a lot. Their pace of play, their average pace of play, is increased. They're playing more in transition and playing more ahead of the defense. They've got experience and toughness about them. Brad's teams always defend. He's a terrific defensive coach. And they run good motion if they have to run half-court offense. But by playing ahead of the defense, now they're getting some easy baskets. So that complements their ability to wear you down offensively, and that complements their ability to sit in a stance and pressure the ball and make you uncomfortable. I think I'm not sure the exact number. I wrote it down, but I mean, they're forcing a turnover about 27% of the possessions. I mean, they're up and under in passing lanes, pushing you to run your offense way out. So I was really, really impressed with him. And you're talking to him this summer. He likes his, like, he knew that he had something a little bit special. Honor gives him another guard that can score it. I really like Newman. I think just, you know, he has a freedom about his game, and Dawes has been really good.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Coach K, with again, he's been consistent with all of this, and I'm curious to get Seth's take on where we are from a college basketball perspective. So, Coach, with that said, you heard what Mike Krzyzewski had to say on really numerous topics after their game the other night against Illinois. So where are we trying to move forward here in the world of college basketball?
Well, first of all, there's a couple things, and in all due respect to Coach K, first of all, the mental health of the players, they probably need to play. All right, they probably need to play. I don't know, you know, just because that's what they do. You can see the joy when they have a chance to play. That's their payoff. Having said that, you know, look, the three P's are real. Patience. All right, take the time to see where we are in this moment in time, evaluate it, and then obviously create multiple plans. And it can't be just one plan because things are constantly changing. And then create a protocol that to me should be across the board. But where he was wrong is that he was making that an NCAA issue. It's not an NCAA issue. It's right. Basically an institutional issue. It's at the conference level. If you want to pause, pause. There's nothing wrong with it. You only have to play 13 games. If you want us to take a step back and reevaluate where we are, then the commissioners need to be able to step up and say, you know what? We've got an issue. Let's take a step back. Let's take 7 days off. Let's test everyone across the board. All right? And then now let's come up with our next plan. Now, our next plan might be going to a pod and putting six teams in an area. People are in online education and go to a pod. It might be shutting down and pausing for another 7 days. But to me, this is not – everyone wants to point the finger at the NCAA. And the NCAA doesn't make those decisions. All right, the NCAA oversees legislation, and the NCAA oversees championships. It's not their responsibility to oversee the day-to-day operation of conferences. So the ACC feels like right now things are out of control. They have the right. Presidents, medical advisors, everyone else get together and say, you know what, we're going to take a step back. Here's the deal. And we saw that, look, we saw it at the start of football season. The Big Ten,
right.
They decided to start late. All right? And then all of a sudden they decided to play because other people were playing and having success. So, like, to me, this is on the conference commissioners. This is on the faculty reps or whoever are in those meetings. Me personally, I think unplugging completely is a mistake and saying we're going to shut it down to January. You can't just unplug these kids, send them home where their environment is not as safe as they are on campus. And I understand people say, well, they're missing that. Some teams aren't going to be able to go home for Christmas. That happens all the time. Football bowl season, who goes home for Christmas? No one complains about it then. You know, Christmas tournaments in basketball, guys go to Hawaii. No one complains about it then. These kids have worked a long time. They want to play. But they need to be in a safe environment. And if unplugging right now is the right thing to do and shutting it down for 7 days, all right, and then retesting everyone in your conference, and then students are off campus and putting them in a safer environment, that's great. But that's why administrators are administrators. So if you think that's the deal, and you, in your heart of hearts, you think that's the right thing, and the medical officials say that's what to do, then do it. But let's not blame it on someone that's not. Let's not blame it on the NCAA. And that's the problem I have. It's so easy to point fingers. Well, you know, they're not professional athletes, and, you know, they're amateurs. It's the NCAA's fault. No, but someone's fault. It's the commissioner's fault. It's the institution's fault. Last year, the ACC tournament, the first team that pulled out of the ACC tournament was who?
Duke.
Before Duke. So you know what? Duke, if you pulled out of the tournament, you didn't think it was safe enough to play, then you know what? If you feel that way, you know, if Mr. White decides to say, you know what? We're not playing. We'll shut it down for a while. We'll figure it out on the backside.
But, Seth, here's the thing. You brought this up 2 weeks ago. I mean, when I heard this 2 days ago, and then I heard your comments last night in the studio, and I thought, well, he said this 2 weeks ago. The planning and the ability to pivot and adjust to the plan is the key. That's why – and look, it has not been perfect in football. And I don't know for the life of me why anybody thought it was going to be perfect in basketball. Okay, and so today we've got – better than a fifth of the ACC basketball teams on pause for the time being. That's fine. You've only got to play 13 games in order to qualify for whatever it is the NCAA is going to do. By the way, they're only hatching ideas. They haven't told us of what their protocol and their process is going to be. It makes more sense, if you're going to do anything, to limit the non-conference stuff prior to the start of the conference stuff. And, oh, by the way, the conference stuff is going to have some gaps between now and Greensboro or now and the NCAA tournament in order to pivot around, because we're going to keep having this. This is not going away day after tomorrow, next Thursday, a week from Wednesday, whatever the case may be.
I agree with that. Like, first of all, I think the ACC tournaments across the board, don't even worry about them. Like to me, if it was me, I would say, you know, we're going to shut it down. We don't have to play any more non-conference games. We're going to get right into league play. And we're going to get into league play in 10 days. And you know what? We're going to have roadblocks and detours. And we understand that. And we're going to work through it. But these kids need to play, because, you know, these kids want to play. I mean, do you see you watched Florida State yesterday. Mental health, right? The mental health of those kids having a chance to play that game and their joy of winning that game. You watch Pitt come back and win. Mental health? We were talking about mental health. These kids want to play. That's what they do. They love the game. They love to compete. The joy that they're having in empty arenas, they're having joy in empty arenas because, you know what, they have such an investment in this thing that they want to go out and compete. And as long as it's done in a safe environment with all the correct protocols and checks and balances – and we are going to have teams like Wake Forest has been, you know, decimated with the virus. So they need to shut down. Now, here's the big question is when you shut a program down and you bring them back, you can't just bring them back like that. You know, if you have a player, there's got to be a better protocol for contact tracing. But if you have a large group of players that get shut, you know, that contact the virus, you have got to be extremely careful when you bring them back. Because if you bring them back too quick and all of a sudden you're practicing 3 days and you're playing on the fourth day and the kids aren't in shape, you're risking injury. Right? That's not in the best interest of the kids. So you've got to come up with some type of protocol. And I think they've done this in the NFL. I think they've done it, I think, in college football. A certain number of guys have to be available for a certain number of practices before you can plug back in and begin playing games. But the more time we have, and like moving it to May, June, July, and saying that, well, you know, we're going to have the vaccine. No, those kids aren't having the vaccine. They're at the end of the line, not at the front of the line. And that's what people understand. When are we going to get enough vaccine? You know, well, like the first batch comes, and you're going to get, obviously, the essential workers. Then you're going to get the elderly. All right, then where are 18 and 19 healthy student athletes Where are they in the line? That's probably May, written, probably not till there, or April, not till they're going to get the vaccine. That doesn't help you.
Yeah.
So I have, like I said, no due respect to Coach K. That's the easy way. And he didn't say that because they lost to Illinois. That ticks me off as much as anything. That's how he feels. And you know what? This sounds silly, but he's the elderly. He's at risk. I mean, I'm at risk. You guys are, well, not as much risk as I am, but I mean, it's the way it is. I mean, so I understand 100% where he's coming from. It's probably a little uncomfortable seeing all these coaches that have contacted the virus. I mean, I talked to Rick Barnes and I spoke to Steve Forbes yesterday, and look, it's not easy. It's scary. I mean, the people are dying every day. You don't want it to be you. So I understand where he's coming from. It had nothing to do with winning and losing. It had zero to do with winning and losing. I think, you know, his background, the prism he looks at it, he thinks maybe we should move forward and do something different.
Listen, stay safe, all right? We always appreciate the insight.
You guys are the best, man. Have a good weekend.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Wes has something to say. Wes, what you got, man?
Believe it or not, I got a tweet here a couple breaks ago. Remember when we were trying to, you know, present scheduling ideas for everybody? Remember that? Remember how we were trying to help everybody with scheduling?
Yeah, you were. You had some ideas about scheduling. You are Mr. Schedule Guy. Okay. You are the schedule guy. What you got?
Somebody hit me up on Twitter, Aces and Canes. From Seneca, South Carolina, which is there are a whole lot of questions there, by the way. Said to me, hey, we'd love to open with Carolina. He's a Miami fan, obviously. But we have a date with Alabama in the Chick-fil-A kickoff game next year.
Straighten you out right there.
How about that?
Straighten you out right from the get-go.
So
there you go.
I'm gonna scratch my idea that I was going to give to everybody for Labor Day night. I'll just scratch that off here. Is that okay if I scratch that?
Well, hey, it was your idea. I'm giving you full credit on that one. You were thinking out of the box.
That's a good idea. I mean, I just didn't realize that Miami was playing Alabama. We all know we got to play that now. Get that out of the way. So there we go. All right, I'm done. Just wanted to share that with you.
Let's go to Tallahassee. There's a lot to talk about at Florida State, one way or the other. Kurt Weiler joins us from the Tallahassee Democrat. Kurt, first of all, we appreciate the time. Boy, there is always something to talk about these days at Florida State, isn't it? But we'll start with hoops because that's a feel-good. That was a really good win last night for Leonard Hamilton's guys. I know the sample size is awfully small, but he has built a great culture. I mean, that is a terrific basketball program and a really good win last night.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you talked about all that's happening in Tallahassee right now. I think it's weird, and some people have talked about it. I think it's weird for Tallahassee to kind of be looking forward to basketball season in terms of, a historic football power that's flipped of late. And I don't know if that flips for good. Obviously, there's hope that the football program can get back, but it's nice that for them that while the football program is down, I mean, the basketball program is kind of doing what it was. I mean, you talk to Leonard Hamilton and kind of his team going into that game. It's not a game where they were going to kind of admit defeat by any means, but they knew they were playing their second game against a team playing its fifth game. And I mean, in terms of especially with how weird this offseason's been, I think that's a pretty big discrepancy. And it was definitely a game where they were kind of trying to see exactly where they were at. I mean, they were placing a lot of very important guys off last year's team, and they showed, I mean, at least in that moment, I mean, they hung around, and I mean, they did it again in overtime. 10 overtime wins in a row is kind of insane.
Kurt, MJ Walker, a lot was expected. I think he's delivered, certainly. Scotty Barnes, a lot was expected. And he delivered last night, too, in just his second college game.
Yeah, Leonard Hamilton traditionally isn't the biggest fan of kind of putting those true freshmen into those huge roles right away. And Scotty, I mean, is kind of stepping in as a true freshman as in that point guard primary starting role and handled it well in that moment. I mean, it was not a spectacular game for him in terms of, I mean, I think he only had 4 points in all of regulation and did some other things, but didn't have the scoring impact. Then he scored 5 of their 7 points in overtime and had the game-winning shot in his second career game. And then you talk about MJ. I mean, you're right. I think when they lost a number of guys like Trent Forrest, like Devin Vassell, like Patrick Williams, it was a guy where it felt like he was a guy that was going to have to maybe individually step up, especially early in the year with how many guys they're going to have stepping into bigger roles. And he has put up 17 and 19 points now in two games. He's really looked the part and has that outside shot still. And has I think he's shown a little more willingness to kind of attack inside too, which hasn't always been the biggest part of his game. So, I mean, all of those factors. It's pretty remarkable how Leonard just kind of keeps reloading.
Kurt, I know the sample size is ridiculous. It's only two games, and we're only a couple weeks into a crazy year anyhow. But it seems like at the top of the food chain in ACC men's basketball, Florida State is now part of the conversation. When you mentioned the Duke and Carolinas and Virginias and Louisville's and throw in anybody in the mood, is it safe to say, here we are on December the 10th, that amongst the quote-unquote elite programs in this league right now, that they're the safest bet on December the 10th?
It's weird. I mean, my thing with that is, I think this year, I mean, I talked about how unusual the offseason is. I mean, Florida State, for the longest time, kind of focused only on offense because they were only able to have so many guys in practice at once because of social distancing and all those restrictions. So it was a really unusual offseason for everyone, and that applies to Florida State too. And so because of that, I do think this is going to be a season where teams are far different in February than they were now at the start of the season. But, I mean, they look the part now. I mean, they look steady now, whereas to where a lot of other ACC teams have kind of had head-scratching moments early. And given Florida State still has plenty of time for that, and, I mean, I'm sure it will come in some capacity. And I think a big thing will determine a lot of this is, A, I mean, how this team grows, and, B, how they – how they handle that adversity, because it's coming and it is still a relatively young group with a lot of guys stepping into bigger roles. But I mean, they handled the adversity well last night.
No doubt about it. Kurt, let's pivot to football here. Roddy Jones and I use a phrase occasionally when we're talking about this season where we welcome teams back to the ACC. Well, this week we welcome Florida State back to the ACC. What kind of expectation do you think Mike Norvell has after a month off?
Yeah, it's a weird thing to say. I was doing some research for a story I'm writing and looking at all the teams that have had layoffs this long. I think FSU is the eighth or ninth team that's had a 28-day layoff in FBS this year, which is, I mean, pretty crazy to think about. The thing with FSU and talking to them and that they say is that they believe because of their kind of unique situation where a lot of those teams found out earlier in the week that they weren't going to be playing that week. Florida State, you look at consecutive days. Obviously, last week with Duke, they knew early in the week they weren't going to be playing that game. But the 2 weeks before that, where they were supposed to host Clemson and Virginia, those were both canceled on the day of the game. So those were – they looked at that as we had an entire week of practice leading up to the game and then just didn't play the game. But they kind of see that as maybe – battling off some of the – keeping some of the rust off in terms of – obviously, you always talk about rest versus rust. And I think they think that how that was for them kind of battled that. I mean, it's a situation – this roster now, I mean, with the severe number of players they've lost, be it to injury, be it to opt out, be it to guys who were going to transfer, this roster now looks a lot more like what – minus whatever they had this offseason, what he's going to have next year. So I think there is a chance here. I mean – You talk to the coaches, they say it's a chance for us to be 14 days better going into the offseason, I mean, whatever that may look like. And I you look at this, I mean, this is this weekend's game. It's the first time they've been favored since the Jacksonville State game, which was in early October. I think it was October 3rd. So, I mean, 2 months. So the opportunity is there. I mean, not to take away from Duke and not by any means to say that I think Florida State's going to roll, because it is far from – I mean, nothing's a gimme with this team this year, but – the opportunity is there for them to build some momentum with this Duke game. And, I mean, we'll see what happens with Wake Forest next weekend, kind of going into that offseason.
Kurt, you mentioned the opting out. It seemed like we went for about a two-week period. Obviously, Florida State wasn't playing, but it felt like every day there was a story of player X opts out. And I mentioned yesterday, hey, you know, kids got to do what it got to do, right? This pandemic, it's a different universe versus anything we've ever experienced. But do we have any handle on what a roster actually looks like right now at Florida State, given that, you know, the COVID numbers you're not going to know. We know about the contact tracing. We knew that for the Virginia game, there was 44 guys available. Since that Virginia game, it just seems like I said, there's been at least a half dozen to a dozen kids who've opted out. Do we have a clue with what the roster actually looks like heading into the Duke game?
So I was doing the math, and some of it, I mean, they're not going to entirely disclose kind of the injury status of guys we don't know are out for the year, but I was doing some of the math of the weekend, and I think by my count, to what I know, they're going to have about, if they had everybody back from contact tracing and everything, which is far from a guinea, but we'll see, they, I think, had 67 of the traditional 85 scholarship guys they're going to have available in some capacity, given that number could be lower if some picked up injuries in the last couple weeks, or if some aren't back from injuries yet. But I mean, it is a reduced roster, no doubt. I mean, they're only going to have two scholarship quarterbacks in Jordan Travis and Tate Rodemaker available because James Blackman no longer with the team. He's going to transfer, and Chuba Purdy, the blue chip freshman, is done for the year with kind of had a re-injury of sorts, a complication from his surgery, not unexpected, but happened earlier than they wanted. They wanted to have him kind of finish out the year. So their situations, I mean, it will be interesting, no doubt. I mean, I think so long as, I mean, Mike Norvell's talked about they're in good spot with COVID. I know the new CDC guidelines that kind of reduced the quarantine period so long as they get a negative test from 2 weeks to one was significant for them just in terms of getting guys back. But we won't have an entire idea. I mean, it'll definitely be doing some sideline counting come Saturday before that game.
All right. We always hear recruiting is going well. I mean, it's like the standard line you get in the month of December from any college football program in the country. How's recruiting? Well, it's going well. All right, how well is it going in Tallahassee? And do you expect, you talk about looking ahead to 21. Well, let's you know, forecast here a little bit. How can the tide turn, at least from what you know right now?
Yeah, I would not say recruiting is going well, actually. I mean, it's, you traditionally hear that. It's especially by Florida State standards. I mean, I think they're the 31st ranked class in the country right now, just in terms of the 247 sports kind of composite rankings. It's, they lost, I mean, last week they lost their quarterback commit out of high school, Luke Altmyer, who flipped to Ole Miss. This week they lost a wide receiver commit. A lot of Florida State fans, I would say, are pretty despondent, and they're kind of wondering about Mike Norvell, the recruiter, which was a question. I mean, can he recruit at this level? Because he hasn't had to do that yet as a head coach coming from Memphis. The truth is, there's not much you can learn from a year like this where, I mean, they took the job in December. They had a new dead period in February. They haven't had any kids on campus since March and aren't until at least April, just with the NCAA not allowing kind of any in-person recruiting for, I mean, a period of over a year due to COVID restrictions. So it's a tough situation for them in terms of their high school class, just because they haven't been able to pitch that vision in person. You can only do so much over the phone, and they have a virtual type thing they can show kids of all the facilities and everything, but that's just, it's not the same. I mean, it's hard to believe, especially, I mean, a guy now, if you're not in on him already, it's hard to believe you're going to be able to convince him in a couple months without kind of that. I think a big thing for them with that 2021 class isn't going to show up in those class rankings. I think it's going to be how they hit the transfer market. I mean, you look at a place like Miami, kind of from year one to year two under Manny Diaz, they hit it hard, and it's paid off for them very well this year. And I mean, I'm not by any means forecasting that this will happen, but I know Florida State is in on, and there's mutual interest between Florida State and Mackenzie Milton. So that would be the UCF transfer, adding that quarterback would be a significant, because I think that's the type of transfer that would make other players want to kind of transfer in to play with him. I mean, you've seen, when healthy, kind of what he looks like. So the transfer market's going to be big, and we don't have kind of a timeline on when that might happen. But if that were to happen, that would be a huge start to a huge boost to what is not going to be an overwhelmingly strong high school recruiting class.
All right. Kurt Weiler covers Florida State, back and forth for the Tallahassee Democrat. Thank you. Appreciate your time, and stay safe.
Appreciate you for having me on.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Thursday. More guests coming your way during the power hour. But in case you missed it, yesterday, Quincy Roche, who's just an outstanding defensive end for the Miami Hurricanes, and you will see him on Sundays. He joined us, and we asked him, yeah, no, you guys are disappointing. You won't be in Charlotte for the ACC championship game, but there's some unfinished business coming to town by the name of the University of North Carolina this weekend.
Yeah, you know, it's a great team. You know, a great opportunity to go out there and dominate. And, you know, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to playing this game.
Quincy, the idea of kind of that layoff you guys came back from the other night. I mean, there are teams that come back off these layoffs and talk about knocking rust off. I didn't see any rust being knocked off in a 48-0 win.
Yeah, I mean, it took a lot of work in practice. We had one of our best weeks on the season in practice, and I think that showed in the game on Saturday.
I know that this has been a unique year for all of you. Before we start talking about North Carolina, your team, and everything else, one of your teammates, Al Blades, announced yesterday he's going to be out for the season. I'm sure that probably unifies you guys even more that when one of your brothers is all of a sudden, hey, part of the group, and he can't go this week and the rest of the season. Just talk about Al and the impact it's going to have on your football team.
You know, this is a real close-knit team, you know, a family atmosphere. We kind of feel for the guys. You know, COVID is impacting millions of people across the country. You know, so we kind of pray for them as a team, and we just support them, and we're going to take them with us on our journey to finish out the season.
That's a good point. Well thought. I would say the journey for you has worked out pretty well, right? I mean, American Defensive Player of the Year a season ago at Temple. You had a marvelous run in Philadelphia with the Owls, and now this transfer to Miami. I can't find anything wrong with any of this for you, Quincy.
Man, it's been a long ride, man. It's been a long journey. I'm appreciative of the opportunity at Miami. I've been having a blast. You know, we're a top 10 team. Only losing one game is hard to do. So we got to finish this season out strong, but it's been a long journey, and it's been a fun journey, though.
You and your bookend partner, Mr. Phillips, will meet you at the quarterback mentality. This could be some kind of challenge this week, but Sam Howell can sling it. They got great backs. They got great wide receivers. Offensive line's good. I'm sure you've watched tape and said, hey, you know what? These guys got us a year ago. I know you weren't part of that game, but I've heard nothing but a lot of talk about, man, that game got away from us last year. This is going to be a big-time showdown coming up Saturday at the Hard Rock.
Yeah, not only did they beat Miami last year, but they beat us pretty bad in a bowl game. You know, so it's definitely a sour taste in my mouth still. So, you know, we're taking this game, you know, just very, very, very seriously. You know, I'm just excited to go out there and get the opportunity to showcase our talents with the team one more time.
Now, wait a second. We all forgot about Temple playing Carolina in the Military Bowl last year, Pac C. Quincy, it sounds like there might be a little more oil in that engine this Saturday for you.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely a bad taste in my mouth. I wasn't happy with that game at all.
Hey, how cool was it, though, you go on the road and get a shutout? Because I know how you guys on defense are, man. It doesn't matter home, away, neutral site. That zero matters, right? I mean, you go back to that locker room. We got 5 turnover change. Duke was turning that thing over left and right. You guys put a zero on the board. You got to figure there's going to be some serious momentum from that game for you guys.
Yeah, 5 turnovers to do it. You know, it's a blessing, and it's a challenge to shut out any team in college football. You know, so that's definitely a great accomplishment. And, you know, like I said, we're going to have to come out and play against North Carolina because, you know, their skills can't compete against anybody's in the country.
Hey, Quincy, I want to wrap at least from my end on this. And in kind of you and De'Eric, they're two grad transfers who have made such a significant impact to what Miami football has been like this year. De'Eric was with us back before the season started, talked about his process of, you know, with Coach Diaz and also Coach Lashley. What was that like for you, and why was Miami the best fit for Quincy Roche?
You know, I kind of met Diaz before, you know, when he was at Temple. You know, I kind of knew Coach Philly. I kind of knew the system on the defense. I got around some of the guys on the team. I got on campus, and it just felt like the right fit for me right away. You know, and I think the guys embraced me right away. They welcomed me with open arms, opened me into the family, and, you know, it's just been smooth sailing from there.
But see, I want to go back to the Clemson game because there was so much hype about that game in October, and it didn't go your way, but it's really been impressive to watch how your team has responded since then. Can you tell us about some of the conversations after that game by saying, hey, listen, that game's not going to beat us twice because, hey, we all knew that, all right, here we go, Miami. We're kind of in the same boat last year where you looked like you turned the corner in November and it was kind of flat and a dud coming down the stretch. You guys have been really, really good since that Clemson game.
Yeah, that was exactly what we said. We didn't want to lose to the same. We didn't want to lose twice because of this game. You know, so it was a tough loss. I thought we bounced back. We responded. We had a lot of good games left in the season. We had a lot of football left. I think this team got better every week, and I still don't think we played our best football.
I like Quincy Roche, Pack. Got a right attitude.
Well, I tell you who else likes Quincy Roche, the National Football League. I mean, Manny got him, and yeah. Man, he is a baller. But the NFL is going to love him, too.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.